Hey, Last Coach Mike here, lastcoachmike.com. Premium guys, I am so humbled by your support of my site. I'm so thankful for everything that you've done. I love this interview. This is our third podcast with Coach Mike Murphy from Penn in his seventh season. Man, they play really, really big games against really, really big opponents and always do well. Well-respected coach. He's on the Board of Trustees of IMLCA. The podcast is interesting. This is the guy we got the 3v2 70-yard with the cages turned the other way drill from. But here we talk about the evolution of his practice. Interesting, again, all the great coaches are always changing the way they practice and modifying. Maybe we could all take something from that, eh? But last time he was running four separate quarters of scrimmages throughout his practices. Now he's gone back to a little more basic practice scheme with kind of a renewed emphasis on the 6v6 and some really cool stuff at the beginning on how he groups his freshmen and integrates kind of a team building activity in early in the year, all laden with competition. Anyway, again, humbled by all of your support, thankful for all of you. Without further ado, Coach Mike Murphy, Penn.
Hey, Lax Coach Mike here, laxcoachmike.com. Got one of my favorite coaches. I can't believe I've been so remiss. It's been since 2013 that we had him on. He was with us in 2011. You got to go back and read that stuff and listen to it. Coach Mike Murphy from Penn. Coach, welcome back. Love you, man.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here. I missed you.
Yeah, right. Hey, last time we talked, I think the first time they were redoing the facilities, and last time they were just about done. Is everything set now with all your new stuff?
Yeah, we're it's all...
I mean, it's probably not new now. It's probably 2 years old, huh?
Yeah, it's nicely broken in, I'd say. We have an indoor facility, a beautiful new weight room, and we've redone our locker room a little bit, and the basketball arena's had a $50 million makeover, so it's an exciting time to be here at Penn and be an athlete here.
Man, I need like a $50 makeover. You got those in your arsenal? Go on the camp
yeah,
website,
yeah,
get like a $50 makeover or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, piece of cake. That's an hour in the weight room. You come out a little stronger, a little more tuned up, you know?
Yeah, is my credit good with you, man? Because $50 is a lot of money for a 60-year-old.
Absolutely.
Coach, you know? Okay, good.
Yeah, no sweat. No sweat. Comes with a strength coach, too, so.
Boy, is he going to be or she going to be disappointed?
No, they'll work with you.
Yeah. Man, you know, it's just so cool. And for most of the people that have been successful, you know, and you've obviously been successful. I was looking back over the records, and I can't believe, you know, I think first time we talked to you was like your second or third year. 2011?
Yep.
Is that your second or third
yep.
year?
Second spring was 11, yeah.
You know, and then it was 4 years, and now here we are today. I mean, we try and keep these timeless, but, man, you guys play brutal schedules. You always have a way of playing great against the great teams, okay? And a lot of times, you know, coaches think that there's a steadfast formula to the way they practice and the way they plan and the way they do things. And obviously on the site, you know, what we find is that maybe with the exception of Dom Starzy a little bit, I got to say that. But, I mean, for the most part, you know, we see guys so willing to change and modify. You know, and the first time we talked, the practice plan was pretty straightforward with one exception. You were a little bit ahead of your time back in 2011. Congratulations. You know, even before the kids were actually doing their stretching and stuff, you would come out and, like, set the tone immediately with a 3v2, you know, and get the ball flying, get the passion up and all that. And from there, the practice plan went, you know, maybe a little bit more traditional in terms of station work and then the you know, transition, for lack of a better description, kind of a macro mm-hmm. description, you know. You like that? You
yeah.
use the word macro in a sentence. I had that one in my notes.
That's great.
Yeah, cool, man. And then I couldn't get into Penn, but still cool. although I got asked to do a commencement speech at Purdue. That was pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah, true lack of testimonial to their background checks on speakers, obviously. And then when we talked later, you know, you had stayed with the 3v2 to open up the passion right away in practice. But from there, you know, we had guys that were interacting scrimmages at different places. We were just starting to see practice plans really revamped in terms of where stuff went, you know, in the schedule. And
yep.
you started doing something that, you know, I may have heard referenced to a couple of times, but never at the D1 level, you actually kind of building in four quarters of scrimmages throughout the course of the like four quarters almost throughout the course of practice. So here's my $65 question for the great Mike Murphy of Penn. Man, have you changed your planning again? Have you stayed with that four-quarter intermittent format with station work and stuff in between? Where are you at now in the way you schedule?
Well, interesting question, because I think...
I was a lot more prepared than you thought, aren't I?
We have evolved, and I think I have an answer for you. We've evolved significantly, and we've kept some of those things, but we've also, I think, evolved in really two primary ways. One, we probably spent a little bit more time in the six-on-six phase, especially on Wednesdays and Thursdays when we're in season. And that, I think, allows our offense to be prepared for what we're going to see and really allows our defense to get enough reps and get our middies through to get enough reps so they have a comfort level with the, you know, maybe two, three, or four main things that the other team is going to show us on Saturday. But at the same time, and I think this is, you know, really a kind of an ongoing debate of how do you stick to what you really believe in your core values and be true to the type of program you're building, and then also stay relevant and stay current to things. And so I think the one way we've evolved is through that, maybe a little more attention to the 6-on-6, which so many teams are playing now, except for Brown and a few others. And then the other way is that we divide our team into four different teams, and that's really more of a factor in the off season. You know, like right now before we start the fall, and then between the fall and the spring seasons, we compete in everything. Compete in the weight room, compete in like 4-on-4 drills and things of that nature, 7-on-7 lacrosse. And so that really has raised the level of intensity in what we do, both in practice and in various training venues, that I think has kind of helped us and made us better. So
Coach, I want to talk about both those. First, on breaking the four teams up, is that something you're got like a team building thought in the back of your head? Are you integrating freshmen and seniors, attack and defense? Or is it segmented in some other way? What's your philosophy on the way you divide up the four groups?
It accomplishes more things that I can even list right now, but
sure.
It really is like that invisible hand of competition that just makes them compete in everything. And we keep score. We have a running tally amongst we actually call them tribes, named after Native American tribes, which I got from Eric Saramet. The concept I got from a friend of mine who coaches football, and we broke it up, and then I was speaking to Eric Saramet one summer day watching kids play, and he told me he named them after tribes. So we have Cherokee, Choctaw, Mohawk, and Seminole tribes, you know, in honor of the founders of our game. And so once a freshman, which they'll get drafted here in a couple of weeks, the seniors will draft freshmen into their tribe, and they'll be on that tribe for 4 years. And so it really does create a lot of kind of team building, and it does a lot of things. You know, the upperclassmen in that tribe will help the younger guys with everything, whether it be clearing or, you know, squat technique or even choosing classes. It kind of carries over into everything. And then when we're in kind of November, you know, late fall months, when, you know, it's kind of hard to keep the juice going, they get competitive, whether it's a tug of war or 7-on-7 game or something like that. So it really does have a wide variety of applications, and really, I think, helps us get to where we want to get to.
So when the upperclassmen are doing the draft, are they cognizant of different positions guys play? I mean, if you're going to do 7-on-7, I mean, they're trying to fill out some shorties and poles and that kind of thing too?
Yep, absolutely. So they'll know, they'll come in with a draft board, and, you know, we have 11 freshmen now, so they'll have an idea of who they want to draft at which position and basic rank order and things like that. It's pretty fun.
Oh, man. Hey, that's creative.
Yeah, it's great. Our guys really like it, and we keep track of things throughout the semester, and basically in the like in the springtime when we're on the road, if we're, you know, on a Friday night or Saturday morning before a game in a hotel, the tribe that's in first place eats first, and so on. So get a little bit of reward there. It's pretty cool. Our guys like that. They'll walk by the pile of bacon, and lost in front of the last place kids and stuff. So.
Oh, too funny.
Yeah.
Let me come back to the first one now in terms of the key evolutions. Yeah, listeners, just like talk amongst yourselves for a second. Man, I am such a turd, Coach. I I've made reference to this before. I have gotten over the years so caught up in transition drills and transition lacrosse that I would still run some 4-on-4, but man, I would go days. Literally days, maybe 2 days a week, and not run 6v6 outside a skeleton, okay?
Right.
And then, you know, talking to guys like you, and you're right, I think, you know, in the sport in general and practice planning, there's almost a movement back to 6-on-6. Is that fair?
Well, it's hard, you know. We made a very strong commitment to pushing as fast as we could push in 2013, and I think it helped us in 2013 and certainly in 2014. But you learn that it kind of takes two to tango, so to speak, because, you know, we can run as fast as we want from defense to offense, but if the other team doesn't want to run from their defense to offense and our defensive end, there's not a lot we can do about it. We can press ride and, right, and do some things that way, but if they can win faceoffs and clear against a 9-man, a 10-man ride, then there's not much you can do, and you've got to be prepared to defend them 25 to 35 times in the 6-on-6. And if you're not good at that, you're going to give up, you know, 10, 12, 14 goals. So you can't skip that step. And that's kind of what we've come to. And we still do a ton of transition, and our practices are upbeat and fast, and we want to play that way. But we also understand that you need to be able to do both. Now, unless there's a shot clock, and now that might speed things up even further, but you still got to be good at 6-on-6 defense.
So, you know, and I think the high school guys especially, and, you know, we get a ton of emails, obviously, and calls and everything else. They're always looking for tips. And, man, I've written probably 6 or 7, you know, articles asking great coaches like you the same question. You know, what is there a situational element or elements, you know, that you throw into the 6v6 so that it stays fast moving and not boring for the guys that aren't in the 6v6? And interestingly enough, I think the, you know, the answer for the high school guys and the, you know, the youth league guys has been making sure that they're subbing quickly in and out of a 6v6.
Right.
You know, I think traditionally they would run the ones against the, you know, at a high school roster, maybe you get 28, 30 guys or 32 guys, and then you got some guys that are on the roster that are freshmen that are, you know, going to get a letter, and that's nice because we need their dues money. But I mean, at the end of the day, well, real life, you know, I mean, I can remember my first year when I went back to coach in high school, you know, I set the roster at 29, and the parents came to me and said, no, we need 35 to make budget.
Wow. Really?
And I'm pretty sure your salary's in the budget, so maybe you want to rethink that, you know.
So
I thought about it, I prayed about it, and ultimately I saw the light, you know, but, yeah, I mean, so if you're thinking about, I guess I'm talking here to the, you know, the high school and the youth coaches, you know, if you're coming back to, and coach makes an incredible point. I mean, you can play fast as much as you want to play, but if you're playing against a team that is going to hold the ball for a minute, 10, minute, 20 seconds, and at high school, you run into teams like that all the time. You know, I mean, coaches that pride themselves on that.
Yeah.
I think inadvertently our defense gets, I mean, to me, it's like fingernails going down a chalkboard, although we don't have chalkboards anymore, I guess, but, at the end of the day, you know, defenses get lulled to sleep, or I don't want to say complacent or bored, but I mean, there's something to be said for making somebody play defense for a minute and a half before you go after them, you know.
No doubt.
And that, you know, my teams especially, and that's the reason I'm saying I'm speaking from my heart here, you know, I realized that I needed to go back. And I'm not sure that in my own mind I was satisfying the requirement with different looks on 4v4s, you know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you have to do it a certain amount to be good at it. And you can replicate 6-on-6 and skeleton and 4-on-4 and all those things that we love doing ourselves. But you still have to work at the actual 6-on-6 offense and defense, especially the defense, you know, a fair amount, you know, if regularly, if not daily.
So is there, are there subtleties or scenarios that you're throwing into your 6v6, or do you have any tips for guys
that
says, okay, you sold me on the concept, man, but how do I make it so that I don't got, excuse me, don't got, listen to me, and all, so I don't have 12 talking to an Ivy League guy. Oh, am I dumb or what? You know, this is a brown guy, for Christ's sake. You know, at the end of the day, you know, at the high school level, if I got 12 sophomores standing on the sidelines for 3 minutes, I got trouble. You know, I got guys throwing dirt on each other, talking about Lucy and all that.
Yeah, that's a big challenge, I think, for, you know, various levels of coaches. What we do is we actually rotate our middies through three areas. You know, they'll be at the north end of the field, you know, for a period of time with the offensive guys, with the attackmen. You know, they'll be at the south end of the field for a different period of time with the defensive guys, and then we'll put them through the face-off X through some wing play there. And so we have usually a rotation where they'll spend, you know, 6 to 12 minutes at each of those places, and not always – everyone doesn't always spend the same amount of time in each place, but that is kind of the way we break it down. And I generally tend to approach the week of practice, you know, say we have 2.5 hours on Monday down to 35 minutes on Friday – kind of a holistic way with first thing I look at is kind of
holistic way. Wow, man, are you like using essential oils and stuff for this? Or like...
Yeah, we just try to take the whole week into account, and you know, it's I won't kind of
I'm kidding.
Well, there are people that are tracking these kids with GPS and heart monitors, and so we're not that far along with it yet. But basically, we want to make sure these guys are peaking on Saturday. But so when we're looking at that kind of rest to work ratio, we want guys working more on Mondays, you know, in the first part of the week. So we'll make sure that there are two or three or four things going on at once. So there isn't a lot of standing around, you know, whether it's for exercise purposes keeping, you know, idle hands or the work of the devil. You don't want to keep those kids busy on the sideline. And then that'll change, you know, maybe by Thursday or Friday, we'll just do 6-on-6 at one end and give everybody a look at what they need to get a look at. But then there are a lot of different variations of it, too, like you touched on. You know, if our first offense needs more of a challenge, we might put 6 poles out there, or even 7 poles, to chase them around a little bit if we're playing a team that's very athletic and applies a lot of pressure. Whereas our first defense, we generally won't even give them long sticks until maybe Tuesday or Wednesday if they're defending the other team that's play defense with 6 short sticks.
Wow.
And there's dropout drills. Yeah, and the dropout drills, like one of the ones we like to do is instead of waiting for somebody to get beat, especially if it's our first defense against a scout group, we'll just call dropout and we call somebody's name or number. They have to run to the nearest line. Something, I think we got that from somebody else. I don't know. That might be a Coach T drill or something. I don't know where I got it. But
hey, I got a great variation on that.
Yeah?
Yeah. The guy that drops out has to run around me. And I'm always moving.
There you go.
So they gotta find me, you know.
Go up in the stands.
I'm a lot more svelte than when I talked to you last time. You know, I did this bout with diabetes, so I'm like 70 pounds lighter, you know.
Oh no way, nice.
I mean, for the wrong reasons, but it's all good now.
We do a
kale
bunch
and
of different...
broccoli in the last year than I did in 59 years before this. But anyway, that could be a lot of fun, you know, or take a kid that, you know, is banged up and not practicing in that drill or something. And,
yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, he can actually move, so they got to look up and find him, you know.
Yeah, find him and track him down.
But you're right, you can't go into the stands or into the bathroom, that's illegal. You know? And that's just wrong, you know, putting two guys in a stall, we won't do that.
So, yeah, right. We have rules against that now.
Oh, man, as we should, I guess, huh?
I guess.
Yeah, I love with the defense with the shorties. You know, I get that question a lot in clinics. You know, do you use nubs? I'm going, no, I don't use nubs, man. I mean,
I'm not a big fan of nubs.
I'm sorry?
I'm not a big fan of nubs. We'll do a little bit of work with them, but usually just every one of our defensemen needs to have a short stick. They'll come out to practice with.
Well, my problem with the nubs is not having a head on the stick to also work on the
ball,
the high side or the low side or where you're trying to make them to go, depending on what your slide package is, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I think you're almost encouraging kids to cross-check, although, you know, it's kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, watching a lot of college lacrosse, you know, and coaching at numerous different levels, I think the referees have been instructed to call the push a lot more seriously than they have before, you know? You used to be able to give that guy a pretty good shove. You know, now you're seeing that called occasionally, which...
Unfortunately,
I don't know,
it's not as consistent as it maybe could be, but...
Oh, man. So, the two key evolutions. What about the overall schedule or the schematic for laying the practice out, Coach?
Yeah, I mean, that hasn't changed a whole lot. Generally, you start
Still kind of going station, transition, scrimmage? Are you putting some of those scrimmages up earlier?
We generally, well, our basic model is similar in that we want to start small to big. So we'll still do the 3-on-2 or a 4-on-3, and we have a different version of that. And then we'll get into some of the individual skill stuff and fun. We still do the fun stations, and then we'll do, you know, maybe 4-on-4s or 2-on-2s, work on some pick game stuff, and then half field components, whether man down or 6-on-6 or both, and then full field with transition indoor clearing, and then usually finish with scrimmage, and then maybe once a week or some you know, some kind of irregular pattern when they're not ready for it, we'll throw in the four quarters. We'll do one or two drills and a quarter, one or two drills and a quarter. So both ways.
Was there something you thought was not being fulfilled, Coach, by running the intermittent four quarters?
Well, it just goes against...
Or was it just time to change and evolve?
Well, I mean, we even you know, 3 or 4 years ago, we didn't do that every day. Probably did it more often than we did now, but I took a class on education class when I was an assistant at Virginia, and one of the things they would talk about is kind of part whole teaching and whole part whole. So I think when you build things, like if we do you know, a thick work drill into a 2-on-2 into a 6-on-6, the 6-on-6 uses some of the 2-on-2 components. And so if you do the 2-on-2 after the 6-on-6, you lose that benefit into the 6-on-6. So there's a, you know, it's called a pedagogy, and so we try to stick to that.
What?
You know,
I got to. After you, I'm going to call Matt Kerwick. He's the only guy that doesn't talk like an Ivy League guy.
He knows.
Wait till somebody sends him an email and says that I said that on the air. Wait till he gets that one. I'll get a phone call right away, man. He'll be down here with a hockey stick banging on me.
Yeah, then we get a cross check and a push. No, he knows what that means. It's basically, you know, way we teach and guys pick up concepts. If one builds on the next and builds on the next, I think we have a kind of a, you know, more of a steeper learning curve, and hopefully they accumulate a little bit more by the end of the practice and then ultimately use it in a live scrimmage situation.
Yeah, and I think for me personally, again, you know, the biggest danger after, you know, 35 years being a head coach is, you know, I hear guys, it's kind of interesting, you know, I get done with a podcast from you. I'm married to the greatest Tippi LaCrosse chick of all time for 37 years, okay?
Wow.
And, oh, man, she's more beautiful today than she was the day I married her, and awesome.
Cool.
And you just don't want to sit next to her at a Steelers or a Pens game. But, yeah, she's a Stevens minister, but she swears like a sailor, you know, watching.
Go on.
She's the ultimate fanatic. Yeah. But anyway.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's more than cool, man. You know, for me, like, I finished a podcast, you know, and this is a metaphor for the listener's sake. You know, and Alice will come home and she'll go, "How'd the podcast go today?" You know, I'll be saying, "Man, I get to talk to Mike Murphy from Penn again." And I'll go, "It was awesome." She goes, "Well, you don't sound like it was awesome." And invariably, you know, I'm melancholy when I get done with these podcasts, you know, for like 2 days. Yeah, because I'm thinking to myself, you know, you're a turd, man. Why didn't you think of this yourself? You know, I mean, you talk to all these coaches, you know, I've got like 250 hours of private tutoring from the greatest lacrosse coaches in the country, you know. And, you know, I'm listening to this stuff going, "Oh, my gosh, I'm doing it wrong." You know?
Right. Yeah.
And so
that's
I guess
you read books and listen to these things, and nobody's got it fixed. As soon as anybody stops trying to learn the stuff, then they're in trouble, you know?
Yeah, but the key phrase that I heard you say was, you know, we'll still go back every once in a while to run in the four quarters, intermittent through practice. And this is not about the four quarters intermittent through practice. But it's got to be blend, you know? And for me, you know, I'll hear an idea or I'll get this transition bug up my rear, and I'm thinking, you know, I've drank the Kool-Aid, and, you know, next thing you know, I mean, I always tell people in our clinics, and they don't understand it, you know, players win and coaches lose, you know, I mean,
Definitely.
"Oh, my kids couldn't throw and catch, so I made them run hills." You idiot, you know? I hear that all the time. You know, I mean, you can't come to our practice today because we're doing conditioning. Why are we doing conditioning? Because we couldn't throw and catch in the last game. Well, the kid's going to get a lot better running up the hill for 45 minutes. I mean, really?
Yeah.
You know, and they look at me like, you don't understand. I've been a football coach for 86 years, and you're going, okay, great, more power to you. But at the end of the day, you know, integrate the new ideas in, you know, but never lose sight of, and I don't know if you do this, man, but, man, I'm always going back and looking at practice plans from 6 years ago, 7 years ago. And I've gotten away from this that was so effective. Now, maybe I got away from something because I found a better way to do it.
Right.
You know? And that's positive, and that's, I think. But at the end of the day, you're going, oh, my gosh, you know, like, you know, we haven't been doing a little zigzag drill. We're just bodying up on the defenders or on the offensive guys between the I mean, that happened to me recently. You know, I'm looking at – we should run a little zigzag drill between the, you know, the box restraining line and the sideline.
Yep.
Zigzag back and forth. And the same thing for our riders, you know, our attackmen, making sure that we were forcing that pole back into the field instead of pushing them out of bounds, you know.
Right,
into where his help is and trying to trap him. But,
yeah,
I'm looking at that drill and I'm going, where have you been for 2 years? You know, that drill had a way of making my soft teams tougher.
Right.
You know, if you had a bunch of pretty boys on your team, you know. Anyway. Yeah, so I think, you know, integration of the ideas and for me anyway, I get a new idea or a new concept after listening to you. And, you know, I just go too deep, man. I just go too deep. And I lose sight of the forest for the trees, maybe.
Yeah, I think everybody does that, too. We get caught up in certain things, whether it's a 10-man ride or shooting drills or whatever it might be. And that's where I think it's really healthy to just kind of step back and look at what you were doing a year ago at this time or 5 years ago and constantly kind of tweak it. But it's still hard, too, I think, to not be afraid to change, but at the same time stick to something. You know, like for us, we have certain things we do and believe in, whether it's in training or school or your defense, and there's a certain continuity to that that I think helps your program to develop some traditions and grow roots and have the guys from 5 years ago be able to have that common kind of bond with guys that play now and 5 years from now. And I think there are some consistencies we need to maintain, but at the same time evolve and stay fresh.
Yeah, I was listening to the podcast from 2013. You were awesome. I sucked. That's the reason I prepared so much. But you had talked about not getting away. I don't want to put words in your mouth that could be misconstrued. But you had talked about integrating more ground ball work into your station work because maybe you had gotten away from the ground ball reps that you thought you really, really needed. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I ask you
if you were doing – because right about that time, you know, coaches that we interview anyway had gotten away from 2v1 ground balls, and it was mostly 1v1s and 2v2s that they thought were more directly emulating a game scenario, you know?
Yeah.
And guys weren't getting hurt and wailed on, and, oh, my God, I see high school guys run that 2v1 ground ball, and it goes into the parking lot, and the other guys are throwing dirt on each other, and these guys are wailing on them. And then ultimately, what does he do? He throws the ball back to the coach. I mean, whatever happened to ground ball pass, you know? I mean, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. But anyway...
Right.
You had talked about, you know, same kind of thing that we're talking about maybe on a micro scale, you know, coming back and doing more GB work. And one of the things you said in that podcast that struck me and has stayed with me forever, incidentally, is, and I've heard it more now, and it kind of leads me to my next question, but you were doing ground ball work in the stations that was actually even like skeleton ground ball work, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as well as finding the open guy and making sure we had somebody adjacent and ground ball pass and all those fundamental things that are wonderful. But you had even gone back, and my point is, so far back to the basics, you know, of where guys were chasing a handful of ground balls, you know, just by themselves and looking up and feeding it, getting another ground ball, looking up and feeding it, and those kind of things.
Right, yep. And we still do those things, and I still believe there's a progression from, you know, just, you know, getting low over the ball with two hands and bring it up to your nose or to your ear or whatever the situation might call for.
If you were Mastera, he'd be putting a bungee cord on your stick in the helmet, man.
I know. And then, but I do think there's a time and place, you know, and I've heard a bunch of different, you know, kind of skill cues for that, you know, both knuckles on the ground and stick at 45 degrees. And, you know, I do believe strongly in two hands, but I'm not sure how much beyond that we need to specify, and that's probably unique. But I do think the consistent drilling of it, whether it be a live or skeleton situation, or what we call mirror, when you break out in front of a guy in two pass. And, I just think that you need to be consistent in your how important it is to you. You see teams like Maryland that are just so committed to ground balls. I don't know what they do exactly, but you can tell the way they play the game, they are spending time on ground balls. But that's actually the one thing that we've evolved. Funny you say that and talk about the old 3-on-2 drill. We still do 3-on-2s, or sometimes we'll do it in a 4-on-3 format, but we've actually started doing a 1-on-1 ground ball or a 2-on-2 ground ball into that 4-on-3 with two goals. And it really, you know, started to get our team more competitive and a little more fighting us for those ground balls, which was a nice, we just literally made it up last year. It was a nice addition, and I think it helped us on the field.
Well, and the listeners have heard me say before, man, I'll tell you one thing that I'm crazy about is running 1v1 ground balls with just attack, and then immediately into a 3v2 or a 4v3.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Know, and the genesis was, you know, when I was coaching at Auburn, I had these, like, gigantic attack men that were incredible post-up shooters, but they couldn't carry a bus pass to the museum, you know. You know, the guys were constantly coming to me, man, coach. And I played them on a 3-3. They were great for a 3-3. They were made for a 3-3 man up, you know. But the end of the day, you know, kids were coming up to me. And my teams, I have what I call Monday with Mike. So after practice on Mondays, I'll stick around as long as you want, and you can talk to me about anything you want one-on-one as long as you're willing to wait in line, you know.
That's
so
good.
We call it Mondays with Mike. And that way I don't have to worry about stuff festering. You know.
Yeah, right.
Some nights early in the year, I don't get home till 8. And then the other thing we tell them is, if you ask me a question, remember, I'm going to tell you the answer.
You know, right.
You don't want to hear it.
Like it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not your dad. You're not going to get a trophy, okay? I told these guys, man, you're like 6'4", 225. You know, this one kid from Chicago. I'm like, but you're a weenie on ground balls.
Right.
You know, and I know you can't carry. And I can't make you a great carrier, okay, because you just don't have the feet for it. But you could play a lot more if you would get ground balls, because every time we get a ground ball, you know, in our attack zone, you know, now we're in transition, and we got a good chance of scoring if we bang it, get it to the backside pipe, you know.
So this
is where you could be effective. You can't be a great feeder, but you can manufacture transition for us better than any other attackman on the team if you're willing to work at it.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll run – I do that 4 times a week. You know, just attackman in a 1v1 ground ball.
That's a good
idea. Either a 3v2 or a 4v3 or even into a 5v5 and then have an add-on for a trailer or something, you know, somebody that's coming back on a clear.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But it makes the attackman – you know, I tell the attackman, you know, the guy who gets 4 ground balls a game is going to start the next game. You know, it's kind of a standard rule. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense. We chart our attacking – ground balls. It's part of, we have a point system, and they get up points for ground balls within the game and stuff too. So,
although it's funny, man, for the old timers like me, that's one really bad thing about sports turf.
Right.
The days of picking up ground ball in between two tufts of grass and a bucket of dust, are gone. Where you really had to get down and immediately, you know, get into a cradle or get the ball up into the. You know, we really want it to be in the stick, or, you know, even if you take a nominal check, you know, it's not going to come out. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, guys pick it up now and run with one hand, you know, like a wand. I mean.
Yep. Different.
Yeah, and the old playground those days didn't exist, man. Let me tell you that.
Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Time goes so fast.
Yeah, it does.
All right. You told me you had one I had to hear. I'm ready.
I think it was the 2-on-2 ground ball into the 4-on-3. So that was the one we added last year that was a spin on our old 3-on-2 drill and combining our ground balls. So we've, last year, I don't know when it was, maybe 2 or 3 games in, we started doing almost all 3-on-2s or 4-on-3s, starting with a 1-on-1 ground ball, sometimes a 2-on-2.
Right.
And that just added a level of kind of fight. Sometimes we'd roll it out from a line. Other times we'd actually throw it out, which is kind of a version of scrimmage that we do. We call scramble scrimmage. You've probably heard of that one, where they're just playing, and if any of the coaches blows a whistle, a double whistle, that means that new ball comes from that coach who blew it, and the old ball is dead. So they're just constantly kind of aware of where the ball is and attacking new ground ball situations, and it puts it right into that attack zone sometimes. And forces those guys to fight for ground balls. So, you know, probably the biggest evolution we went through last year was, you know, raising the stakes on the ground balls, putting them into more live situations.
Yeah, man, I got a drill I love from Purdy at Adelphi.
Oh, no way.
He closes practice with what he calls 15 balls of transition.
Oh, wow.
And it is full field. Double blow, roll the ball anywhere, presumably where everybody has to run 30 yards to chase it down because it's a conditioning drill, right?
Oh, cool, yeah.
But with it being 15, you're just going to, you know, you go out there. I've never said this before. I got to tell you the way I do it. My daughter, she like has two advanced degrees in education. She got so frustrated with my 33-year-old daughter, but so with the educational system and not being able to have conversations in her classroom that were meaningful if they weren't in a lesson plan and all that. You know, she started an Etsy shop from her home. Now she got like a bedroom, looks like a Chinese sweatshop. You know, it's got like all these different embroidery machines with 37 spools of thread. And, you know,
wow.
God bless my 4-year-old grandson. He goes in there, they're going to find him like hanging from thread one day. which the dog has already happened to. But anyway, you know, for a couple years it was that rage. You know, she quit making them because of liability, but it was like a blanket that went around your neck, and you could put the baby in the sling. You know,
really?
And I told her, I said, you can't do that.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, like
the baby
little,
falls out. It's just one piece of cloth. It looks almost like what do they call them, those necklaces, like fabric necklace, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't you mean choker?
Infinity necklace or whatever it is. Anyway.
Oh, right.
I don't understand fashion, obviously. And, you know, I grabbed one of those from her, and I can put 15 balls in it. Okay.
Really?
Yeah, how cool is that, right?
Wow.
And, so you take 15 balls and you break them up into two teams. And, you know, if you got a big roster, you're subbing in and out. But you're playing best of 15 in one goal games, basically.
Oh,
off
cool.
The scramble.
No way.
And that's if somebody gets nine, it's over and the other guy's got to run.
Right. Yep. Wow.
You know? So with it being 15, it's an odd number, you know, so it's never tied at the end.
Right, yeah.
And then you hear the losers are always going, no, man, let's go best of 17, you know.
Yeah, right. Add two more balls. I like that one. That is a good idea.
Yeah, 15 balls of transition. It's on the website. Yeah.
Cool. Well,
hey, did you tell me you were doing something with the 3v2 with the cages?
Well, the only thing, like I said before, is we've added the ground ball element to it.
Oh, added the GB element. Okay.
Yeah, so that was the evolution there. We still do 3-on-2s back and forth, 3-on-2s. We've added one version of it that's not, I think, fairly well known. So not only we'll turn the goals around to do the invert work, but we'll also do just 3-on-2s on the side where the offensive players can't cross the center line. So they have to kind of stay on the right-handed side or left-handed side of the goal. We'll do those usually once a week or so as well.
Yeah, listeners, you got to go back and catch that drill, man. We were talking about everybody does variations of it, right? And, you know, and it's a 3v2, either sideline to sideline or 70 yards. And, you know, you may run a run day. I got a lot of articles on my site on a lot of variations. You may run it one day where the defender's got to go back. It may be all guys coming in on clears. I mean, it could be anything.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of different ways to run it.
Right.
But it's basically 3v2 back and forth. So
yep.
I didn't know Coach, right?
Coaching.
And he was like a 2-year coach at Penn, we're talking. And I'm saying, give me a new idea, or I'd love to hear a new idea. And he's going, yeah, what we do is we run that drill and turn the cages around the other way.
Right.
And do it as like an invert thing. And I think I told you the second time we talked, I ran that with my team. They looked like they had never, ever, ever seen a lacrosse drill in their life. they got down to the cages and they're going like, okay, now what do I do? No, you take it. No, man, I don't know what to do.
Right.
No, you take it, you know.
It's awkward.
Yeah, it is up on the website, and I was telling you off the air, yeah, when I do the clinics, I always get asked, you know, what's the most unique drill, you know? And that one is always at the top of the list. So I have, in my own little way, man, I have tried to make you famous for something that maybe you're not that proud of. I don't know, you know, end of the day.
Yeah. I got part of the idea from Aaron Quinn, who's the Middlebury athletic director, used to be the lacrosse coach.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine. We used to share ideas a lot.
Anything else, Coach, that you're running new, drill-wise?
I'm trying to think. I think that's about it. The tribal thing is big. That adds a lot of energy to a lot of the different drills we were already doing. And then the ground ball, one-on-one live ground ball component of the continuous 3-on-2 drills has been helpful too. So that's the basic new stuff.
All right, last stack question for you, man. I'll let you go. Man up last year, 433.
Yeah.
Pretty really good, you know.
Yeah.
Any secrets or anything you've changed or modified on man up? And you need
to
know before you answer, the coaches I don't like, they always say, oh, Billy runs man up, I don't know anything about it. That's bullshit.
Well, that is true, and you know, I only say that because Pat Myers gets credit for it. But I think it's related to what we talked about before, and just giving more time to it. You know, we had a good quarterback there, Nick Doctor, and Pat Myers, our offensive coordinator, did a great job of
good
getting
coach.
Our guys ready and doing film. And
you got a good coaching
all that
staff,
stuff.
Actually, man. I mean, you get great resources on you. I mean, Stagnita, yeah.
Yeah, Coach Stags left. Coach Akeda is now.
Oh, did he?
Okay. Akeda is our new defensive coach, and a guy named Todd McFarland just joined us from Maryland as our other assistant. A guy named Mike Bartomioli is our director of operations. So we have couldn't be more excited about our staff. But the man up stuff was really, you know, the personnel and the coach doing a very good job, and I think I was dedicating more time to it. You know, if you want to be good at something, you have to work at it. So. Whether it's ground balls or man up or defense.
Now, are you integrating those into practice, Coach?
Yeah, you know, that's where we're.
I mean, rather than run, you know, my genre, you know, you got done conditioning and then everybody went in the locker room and man up, man down stayed for a half hour.
Yeah.
Or 20 minutes. And, you know,
yep.
Over the last 2 years, especially, you know, in the middle of a 4v3 drill, you know, a coach will scream, okay, man up for a minute. And
right.
They'll run right in and have to, you know, assimilate, you know, what set they're running, or you let the kids call it, or maybe the offensive coach, you know, spends a minute with them saying, okay, let's do this and rotate into this or whatever it turns out to be. And running that, you know, a handful. I mean, I'm not talking about fall or early spring, although in the Ivy League, you guys don't really have Ivy spring or early spring. You know, you guys start practice and then there's like a game in an hour and a half.
We don't have as much prep time. I think we have enough, but point being is that we don't generally keep them later in practice. We'll do some shooting work or some face off work opposite the man up, man down. But what they'll do a lot of times is we have certain time set aside built into our week on, usually on Mondays. We call it one more time where guys can work on whatever they want. You know, they want to come in and, you know, watch some film or do some extra shooting or whatever it might be. And it's usually before practice on Mondays and Wednesdays. And that'll be a time for our main up group to get together and just, you know, either watch film or do some skeleton work or whatever.
Well,
that's
voluntary workout time.
Yeah. Well, those are
I got it. Okay,
We put it down, but but it isn't part of normal practice. So the only people that will be out there will be, you know, just the 7 or 8 main up guys or whoever it might be. So I think taking advantage of you know, times like that in the schedule helps them to get on the same page and kind of refine their skills.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, man, we're up on it. I can't believe it. It goes so fast. I love talking to you.
Likewise. Thanks, Mike.
And I'll be melancholy after this, too. I want to promote the camps, which are now mostly being done on campus with these great new mildly broken-in facilities.
Yep.
How's the food on campus, man? How's the food at Penn?
Food on campus is very good, and then you have access to famous food carts that offer everything from fresh fruit to cheesesteaks. And then just along the border of campus, there are a ton of great restaurants. So, from, you know, everything from kind of a fast food up to, you know, 5-star white tablecloth dining.
Yeah, I don't even know how to act it. I'm a 99-cent draft, 35-cent wing guy.
Yep, there's a place for that, too.
And luckily, I'm married to one, too, so it's awesome. Yeah, it's a Pittsburgh influence. You know, it's Pittsburgh,
nice.
You know. Yeah.
Steel City beer. There you go.
Exactly. But talk to us a little bit about the showcases. Timing is really pretty good. We got one coming up in September, one in October, and then you have a couple of more developmental camps in the months following that. Give us a quick rundown on that, Coach, and then I'll have all these links on the website, too.
Great. Thanks, Mike. We have these prospect clinics. We run 3 of them. They're always the last Sunday in September, the last Sunday in October, and then the last Sunday in June. And then we also have two more developmental camps. One is an indoor camp. We're very lucky. We have a big indoor facility that's full field and things. So we do that the first weekend in December, and then we run our more traditional teaching camp, instructional camp, kind of middle of the second week of July. This in 2017, it will be July 11, 12, 13.
Well, I mean, we try and keep these podcasts timeless, obviously.
Yeah.
But, man, you got some great young talent there. What was I reading
Thanks.
About the amount of guys you had on the U19 team? Like five guys?
Yeah. Yeah, we had four guys on it. So that was, a couple starting attackmen, first line middie. And so,
I bet they got drafted pretty high.
Yeah. They definitely did. They were some of the first picks, obviously, but, and they had a great freshman year last year too. Simon Mathias was co-rookie of the year in the Ivy League, and Tyler Dunn on our first midfield line the whole year, and Alex Rosner was a starting attackman, scored a bunch of points for us last year as a freshman. So that class, is very, very good. Current now sophomores, and that I think summer experience representing our country and our program and bringing that gold medal back to the United States was a fantastic experience for them. And so hopefully they come back, a little bit more seasoned than somebody else would after 1 year. But they all, it's a very good class. I think at any given point, we were starting five freshmen last year. So hopefully they come back with a little bit more confidence and composure and a little bit more urgency. And we take another step forward this year.
Awesome, man. Well, you are the greatest thing since sliced bread. I can't thank you enough for coming.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. My pleasure. And anytime you want me back, I'd love to come on.
Yeah, what did I let it go last time? Holy mackerel, like 3 years. Yeah,
that's
you're a lot funnier this time. That's not going to happen again, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're on tap for about 18 months. I got you penciled in, so we're all good. Hey, stay in line with me here. We sign off. This is Lax Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com. Hey, guys, remember, unbelievable responsibility we all have, having the opportunity to influence the lives of these young people. Take it very seriously every day. Until next time, God bless everybody.